You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a live edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Beasley, joined by my colleague, Everton correspondent for the Echo, Joe Thomas, and our regular guest, Gavin Buckland. Just before we start, I'm going to preview tomorrow's trip to Brighton and Hove Albion. Just remind you that it's... I did a very special edition of the Royal Blue podcast earlier this week when I went down to speak to the renowned sports artist Paul Trevelyan, gave his amazing thoughts, some 87 years on, I must add, on Everton legend Dixie Dean, and the anniversary of that game was yesterday. I mean, the podcast, thankfully, been very well received, and I'd implore you all to give that one a listen. There's not too much of me on it. I'm there with him, and it's mainly Paul Trevelyan. But incredible memories of Dixie, and it's got the seal of approval, no doubt, from Dixie's own daughter and granddaughter, who've taken it in, and Melanie Prentice's granddaughter. She absolutely loves it. So I think for football fans of any persuasion, really, to give that one a go if possible. But as we get back to contemporary matters, Joe, you were at Finch Farm yesterday to speak to Sean Dyche previewing this fixture, and some interesting comments from the manager. He spoke about, for the first time, he admitted that, you know, the points deduction could be playing on the minds of the players.
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably an important part, bearing in mind we're live, and I mean, we're just at lunchtime now on Friday. Probably worth starting by saying that at the moment there's been no verdict on the points appeal just yet. So at the moment, I mean, the fact that we're sat down here suggests that we're not scrambling around to write anything at this stage. So yeah, we're getting towards the end of another week without an answer. There is still potential for that to change over the next few hours, but you know, I mean, where we end up, I'm not entirely sure myself. And Chris heading down to Brighton later, and I think both of us have this horrible vision of filing on the road, on the, you know, driving down the M6, writing pieces about whatever the outcome is. But you know, hopefully that won't be the case. But having said that, no, you're perfectly right there, Chris. Spoke to Sean Dyche, actually asked him about this. This was in the embargo section, so this is after the cameras go off from what people see on live, and was asking him about, well, actually, my starting point, the question was saying, from your perspective, Sean, obviously I'm speaking on a Thursday afternoon, would you have any concerns about the answer to this coming out on the Friday, given the, you know, the impact it could have on your preparations going to Saturday? Is Friday a bad time for this? Because it's clearly something that's been weighing on the players' minds. And, and whilst Dyche acknowledges that for the first time in this interview, I think, let's be perfectly honest, common sense would tell us that that's always been the case. Dyche's answer was no, football is ready for the outcome, including them. I think his verdict is that clarity is needed as soon as possible. Because once everybody has clarity, they have an idea as to what the state of play is and how what conditions after they're operating in. An outcome in this still doesn't lead to an end of uncertainty, because we have the second case, of course, coming. But at least gives us a little bit more guidance as to wherever in our as we stand here right now and approach the kind of the final third of the season, as it were. But yeah, you're right there. You know, Dyche acknowledged for the first time really that there is probably a psychological impact that the off pitch uncertainty is having on his players. He says that their focus has been very good. Yeah, but he can only control so much. He can control what goes on the training ground. He can control what goes on about kind of the health and care of the players around, you know, in their wider lives, as far as a club can have a say in that.
Yeah.
But what he can't do is he can't control what they're thinking as they drive to and from the training ground, or, you know, when they wake up in the morning ahead of a game and things like that. And, you know, I think that that is just logical, to be perfectly honest. And it feels significant because he's saying this for the first time. The reaction has been quite interesting because obviously I've put it out there this morning, and I've been surprised at how many people are saying that it's interesting he says this after what was, I think we would all accept, a really poor result and performance in a big game. Probably the first time in a few months that you can actually genuinely question a Dyche side and its performance and its setup. So there might be a few cynics amongst us. Maybe that's an indictment of when Dyche opens up when it comes to being asked questions by the press, because he's been asked this for a long time. And I think it's very clear that I think Dyche is an intelligent person, and I think he approaches press conferences with an idea of what he's happy to say and what he's not happy to say. Mm. And I think as a result of that, he has a degree of control over when he releases certain bits. The reality is it's probably had a psychological impact on the players from the very beginning. And, you know, if there'd been acknowledgement of that more throughout the process, then perhaps there'd be less skepticism around releasing that information now. But ultimately, I do think that it's something that's weighing on his mind, the player's mind, it's weighing on all of our mind. I think we could all, if we step back from any gameplay, and actually understand, have sympathy and empathy with Dyche and the players, because, you know, we've probably all been in unfortunate positions where there's been uncertainty around what we're doing in our day jobs and in our lines of work, whatever they have been. Mm-hmm. And that isn't easy for anybody that's operating in those circumstances.
Yeah, and we obviously welcome all your comments on this or any other topics that we're going to discuss today, Gav. But following on from what Joe says, Gav, what do you think about the timing of this? It is interesting, like as Joe says, it must be natural that it has been playing on the mind all this time, but to come out and make that admission now at this moment in time.
Well, yeah, it'd be interesting to see why that's the case, but what, you know, how the impact's affecting them. Is it just the fact that actually we've lost 10 points and we've not got what we deserve this season? Or is it because the 10 points is now forced into the relegation zone, and so we are now thinking with the psychology of a club in and around the relegation zone like we were last season and the season before? You know, they're two completely different things, aren't they? Because if we were 5 points ahead of the relegation zone, it's a different feeling, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, but it's a 10 points, so we're disappointed. We should be eighth rather than 15th or something like that. That's a slightly different feeling, isn't it? A very different feeling too. Actually, what this has done now is, rather than being 12th, we're now in the relegation zone, and we are now playing with the pressure of a relegation threatened side. And I suspect it's the latter.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I think it's the position the 10-point deduction has put us in, rather than the 10-point deduction per se. And you saw that on Monday all day long, didn't you? Yeah. That looked like a team that was, and because we were playing Palace as well, that was under pressure.
Yeah.
And I think that is, and you can fully understand that. I don't think it's the 10-point deduction as such, it's the impact of the 10-point deduction. And I think, so that's one angle, and I think that's definitely the case. You can see that in plain sight. I think the other angle to this is the effect on Dyche. Mm-hmm. You know, does uncertainty and stuff like that. I'm fairly certain that if he had an extra 5 points, he'd be looking at his team selection slightly different on occasions, tactics in games. You know, I think that is one thing at the end of the season. I think he'd probably look back and say, in reviewing the campaign, wherever we finish in January and February, if I knew we were 5 points better off, I might have done something slightly different. And I think that probably is also the other aspect of it. So I think there's two things: impact on players, impact on Dyche. But I definitely think the impact on players is there in plain sight. We are now in the relegation zone or in and around it, and we wouldn't be in that position if we had the extra 10 points. And I can fully understand that. If we were further up the table, I think the 10-point deduction impact is slightly different vibe to it, and I fully agree with it, and that's fully understandable.
Yeah, just come back there. I think in the rounds and the wider conversation, one of the things that Dyche was pointing to is the fact that the 10 points is applied immediately.
Yeah.
So I think he seems to suggest that it might have less of an impact if it was a whilst the appeal was pending, the 10 points remained on Evans' points tally, as opposed to now, because you, again, it changes that mindset, doesn't it? It's the difference of going into Palace 12th, 5 or 6 points clear of Palace, and thinking, all right, we want to try and increase a buffer to the relegation zone, but psychologically, we haven't got that pressure of seeing Everton in and around that dotted line throughout this process. So I think you're spot on there, where you say it's probably that it's almost the process of the deduction, what it means, rather than the fact that it's off the pitch uncertainty.
I think
that's significant. I think you make a really valid point around selection and how that might have changed depending on how this process had been handled over recent months. I think there's probably less of an opportunity for reflection on that for Dyche, simply because if you look at the last 2 months, we already know that he's got a very small squad, and the injuries have probably meant that there hasn't actually been that much that he could have done differently for most of those games. Yeah. But the first game that we can probably say, actually, there's a degree of accountability and responsibility from the dugout for how things have unfolded on the pitch, and it could have been different and probably should have been different, is that Palace game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there were other options in that starting lineup and other ways of approaching that game. And unfortunately, you know, it didn't play out, and that feels quite detrimental. I think we're probably at a point now where there was a hope that things would start righting themselves, that Evan could help get themselves out of this a little bit more. But instead, the form of Luton, which is, you know, obviously they've had defeats recently, but they probably picked up more points than we all expected them to. That's exacerbated the situation, along with the fact that Everton have just gone so long without winning the Premier League, has also made things worse. So all of a sudden, you know, I think they've probably gone from hoping for points back to starting to think, actually, we need points back here.
Yeah,
and not getting them on the pitch.
And that's the thing, it's the same scenario that's played out 2022 and 2023, isn't it? You just get that impression when you listen to conversations with Dyche and players, and, you know, the general atmosphere around the club. It's the same as 22 and 23, albeit for completely different reasons. Yeah. And when you're in that position, you know, you're just under pressure. Yeah. Fans feel it, don't they?
And also, I guess, the longer that you're in a relegation zone or in and around the relegation zone, it's probably natural, the more that you start to begin to feel like you are a relegation threatened team rather than a team that's got 8 wins and...
Yeah.
You know, and 30 points, isn't it? Yeah. That must have an impact, because it would take some resolve to be 2 months on going into this saying, no, actually, no, we are mid-table side. Yeah. 2 months on without a win. And the one, another thing, like what I would say in relation to Dyche, I thought he was being genuine and open. And again, timing is awkward, and I think that's perhaps a situation to create for himself, because I think sometimes he probably comes out of maybe trying to protect the players, protect the dressing room. And obviously there are battles there that we don't see because we're not inside the club. We're not privy to them in his mindset, and there'll be reasons for what he does. But obviously, if he'd been a bit more open on this a couple of weeks ago, then amid the injuries or when things weren't looking as severe, or there hadn't just been a game like the Palace one, then there might be a degree more of acceptance of what he's saying. But I do think what he's saying is legitimate, justified. Maybe could have said it earlier, but I think he does make strong points. And I also think it's worth bearing in mind that whilst, you know, obviously he says this after the Palace game, which was a bad night for Everton, he was also adopting the same strategy when things were good. You know, he wasn't going, when we had those 4 wins in a row, he wasn't going, this is galvanised the club, this is galvanised the players. Again, he took the same approach, so he has been consistent, just like he hasn't sought to, you know, give influence to the deduction on those wins and that run of form. You know, now there's a consistent approach there, so I don't think it's necessarily excuse-making. No. I can understand why it's read that way.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yes, so he said, obviously, Gab, about the table, because obviously, the initial, obviously, there was a defeat to United, but there was the four wins in a row. And as Joe said, 2 months now without the Premier League victory. Just looking at his actual quotes there, it says, Deitch, I think the focus has been good. But the bit I'm talking about is the subliminal bit. When you're driving your car and you're wondering, I can't control that. I can control the training program, health and well-being around that, what we do, but I can't control their inner thoughts. Again, it's going back to that other phrase he uses, controlling the controllables. But like you said, it is an inevitability. And the people, like you said, you will change your actions because of this and your thoughts.
Well, I think that the thoughts are because you're in the relegation battle and, you know, we're looking at... As you weren't doing properly before Christmas, looking at the results of other clubs, how many now and their fixtures. And
well, I mean, how many of us were sitting there at half time at Anfield the other night thinking,
absolutely. And I think like that is the thing, isn't it? We're just in that same position. And I get what he's saying, but he couldn't do that last year to a degree, could he, in 2023 when you don't know what players feel like away from the pitch. And it's pretty much in the same boat, and I think he can only do what he can do. I think that's I'm guessing here completely, but I think the pressure on players is because they're in the relegation strap, not I've got a real sense of, you know, anger because we lost 10 points.
I think there was that at the beginning.
But you accept that, don't you, really, after a while, and you adapt. I think the thing is it's the relegation thing.
Because you can see the same thing with the fans, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, obviously the fans were up for Monday night, but it was almost a kind of, it was hard to see, you know, chicken and egg situation where you could see that there was a degree of concern, and all of a sudden it's moving from anger at the footballing authorities to more kind of fear and trepidation, anxiety over what might become in Everton's way if they can't sort things on the pitch. And maybe that nervousness, that nervousness was obviously exacerbated by the players, who very quickly adopted a patterns of play, which I think frustrated everybody and added to the sense. And, you know, maybe it's, whether it started in the stands and moved on to the pitch, or whether it started in the pitch and moved on to the stands, is an interesting argument. But I think that, you know, players, fans, manager, you know, club, I think we're all actually in the same position here.
I think that's a really good point Joe makes, because you detected that on Monday, didn't you? Whereas probably the home games for the previous, the only home games you've had since the original commission, maybe 4, 5, 6, I can't remember. The anger is very much on the terraces as being to the Premier League, hasn't it? And, you know, I've had all the cards out and stuff. The anger on Monday was more directed towards the player and manager, a lot more, I thought, at the end of the game, and quite rightly so, and understandably so, because it was a poor performance. And in some respects, that's quite comforting to hear, because it means that we know where we stand. You know, we there's knowledge of where we stand. At the same time, it just shows that we you know, the reality is that, you know, you can direct your anger to the Premier League, and quite rightly, in the commission, but ultimately you've got to fight the battle on the pitch, haven't you, really? And acknowledge where you are, and where we are is we're in a relegation battle. Like Rob and Pitt, that may change, and it may change again, and may change again and again, but that's where we are. And I think that was a bit of a wake up call on Monday.
And I think as a consequence, it is exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah,
because, you know, when I think about this week, you know, if you think for obviously us working around it and supporters and for the players, just this week alone, and we're miles away from the end of the season at the moment, but you go Monday night, Everton go 1-0 down to Palace, you're thinking, oh, I could get cut adrift here. Obviously, come back and get a draw. Tuesday night, you know, half time, it's 0-0, Man City, Brentford. You're thinking, oh, Brentford are going to pick up a point and just move a little bit further here. Wednesday night, you've got Luton winning Anfield at half time. All right, Everton got a point. Luton and Brentford both lost. But every night, you're being hit with that in and around, aren't you? That stress. And, you know, football isn't life or death. It's not the most important thing in the world, but it is something that has a massive impact on all of our lives. And, yeah, just over the course of those 3 days in the middle of a week there, you're going, like, every single
just time. To lighten this up for a second. Yeah. Well, I can say, I can't believe this, because I just checked the full-time scores. I am not one of these people. I didn't know that Luton were 1-0 off at Anfield until that point, and I saw the final score. It was 4-1 Liverpool. I was like, okay, we're all Copites that night. What a line to say on the Royal Blue podcast. But I, especially these tough seasons that Everton are going through at the moment, and we were talking about the games right at the end of last season. Was it Newcastle, Leicester City up there, and then Hearts and the Mouth stuff? I just checked the final score at the end of the game. And you know, good or bad, it is what it is. I don't live it. It's enough having to live the Everton games without having to see, oh, Luton are 1-0 up at Anfield.
Yeah.
Far more disciplined than I am. Far more disciplined.
Just to extend a little bit further, I play football from 8 till 9 on Wednesday. And you can hear, if Liverpool are playing at home, you can hear the roars of the crowd. Oh, and normally on here, they go, scored, haven't he? And I've never been so comforted in my life. He scored. That's good news, you know. Yeah. And then he scored again. I think shortly after, and then he had the third one, thinking that is good news. Yeah. And but that's what happens, isn't it? We've had this the last two seasons, but I do think, you know, that this is where it's impacting on the players and the club and the managers, isn't it? Where the 10 points have put us, not the 10 point deduction.
Yeah. Well, on a similar theme, Joe, another article you've done obviously there about the Everton Fans Advisory Board and the letter that they've done now. They've called for an end to the lingering uncertainty, which they believe is casting a long shadow over the club. I mean, this isn't just talking about the points addiction. This is about the ongoing proposed takeover of the club, 777. I mean, it's something you've been over now for a long time. I mean, when the statement was originally made in September, wasn't it? For Hartmanshire, he'd agreed the sale of his entire stake of the club. They were expecting a decision by the end of the calendar year. Here we are now. We're almost into March and it's still not been resolved.
Yeah, I mean, I think, we now know that this was the case, but we probably all had a few suspicions that they were bullish projections for a result before Christmas. Yeah. They gave us a time frame that we'd compare things for, but I mean, even at the time, people were saying it would probably go into the new year, perhaps not to the extent that we thought it would do. Everton just in this very unhappy position at the moment, are they, where there's just so much uncertainty. And then there's this strange kind of irony to the fact that it's both the ball in both cases is essentially with the Premier League. I know it's an independent commission that is we're waiting on to deliver its verdict in relation to the appeal, but still the culmination of a Premier League process. It was strong words from the FAB, and I think it's probably important to say it came after its regular meeting with the club, a meeting at which, different people have different opinions on the fan advisory board. I think that a lot of very good people dedicate a lot of time and effort to doing what they can to fight for fans in relation and to raise fan perspectives with the club. And I think that's valuable. And, in this case, you can see they've been asking questions about the club's finances in relation to things like the deduction and then the appeal, but also in relation to the 777 takeover or attempted takeover. Now, they might not have got the answers that they're after, but I mean, that's something that all of us are struggling to currently get at the minute. But I think the fact that they're willing to kind of go out there and just break their silence, I think will it make a difference? I don't think so. I don't think the Premier League are going to spring into action because Everton Fan Advisory Board said it. But I think that what is fair to say, and I think they're doing a very good job at highlighting this, is Everton are in an unhappy position at the moment where they seem to essentially be the test case for two different Premier League processes. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in both, they've probably highlighted that neither process is fit for purpose or completely fit for purpose. Now, that we want the Premier League's fit, the owner and director's test. We want it to be as rigorous as it needs to be. We want that. I think that we've said it from the start, and I think we still do. We all have, or I certainly do have reservations about 777 and whether or not they're viable and suitable owners for Everton Football Club. So we want the scrutiny to be serious and to be applied properly. But there also has to be an end to the process. And my understanding is, it's that last week the Premier League asked more questions to 777 in relation to funding and funding strategies for the next 3 years. I mean, we're into the sixth month of the process now. I mean, surely they were the first questions to be dealt with. And if there's still concerns now 6 months on or five and a bit months on over the sources of that, then, and over those basic questions, then that raises its own issues. At some point, the purgatory's got to end and the decision's got to be made. And you wonder if there's an element almost of the police, I don't know where that came from, the Premier League, almost being too afraid to make a decision because they're almost not sure which way to go on this, because that's, you know, for all the concerns about 777, you know, they've put more than £150 million of junior debt into the club. Like, there isn't a way of looking at that and not thinking that they are playing a significant role in paying the bills that are keeping everything going, because why else would you take on that debt? So, you know, it's a really, I don't know what the answer on that is. Like, I think, you know, I have serious concerns over 777, but I also have serious concerns over what's happen if they didn't get approval. But essentially what you're getting, you know, we are into a 6 month now. This lingering uncertainty is something that has a, you know, is casting a pall over the club and over the fan base at the moment. And it is something that for the future of the club, short term, long term, you know, it needs some certainty over. Either 777, we either need to get to a point now, and surely we must be close, where the Premier League go to 777. Either your answers aren't good enough, or they make a decision based on the information that they've got, and you know where that leads us, I'm not entirely sure. But you know, just like with the Premier, just like with the points deduction again, you know, it's an appeal. Everton are the guinea pig in, and whilst they, you know, we can talk long about how Everton have put themselves in a position where they've exposed themselves to this uncertainty, and they've exposed themselves to being test cases in these, you know, official regulatory protocols, and you know, the club has to take some responsibility for that. You know, we're all kind of experiencing, I think, fatigue in relation to this. And I don't think it is in anybody's interests now for the either of these processes to be dragging on.
Mm. I mean, Gav, you've said in many ways is actually more important than the points deduction, but Everton seem to be caught between a rock and a hard place.
Including the Premier League. Yeah. Far more important than the commission, this issue. Mm-hmm. As Joe was saying, I think the key thing here is there's two things going on, isn't there, at the same time. I can't help feeling that if there was no commission going on at the same time, that Everton's finances were okay, whether they'd be getting taken over is a different thing. Just one decision the Premier League had to deal with, one thing, it would have been made earlier. Mm-hmm. I think the fact there's a commission going on and all the bad publicity that the Premier League has engendered for quite legitimately means that they are in between a rock and a hard place on this. I mean, they can't reject. They can only approve, can't they? But
yeah, it's a bit of a grey area. One of the things I'm trying to work out at the moment and get some clarity on is whether actually the Premier League can ever actually just say no, or whether it's incumbent on the potential new owners to prove that they're suitable.
Yeah.
And that's when and either prove it or walk away because they realise that they can't. I'm not quite sure on that.
So the Premier League's rock and hard police position is they've got this test that they've got a, you know, 777 got a pass, and they might think, not so sure about that. But actually, if we don't allow it, we're going to get a whole load of stick over the length of time it's taken, and the fact this is another way of, if Everton really struggle financially as a consequence of that we've been, again, part of that. So, that you know, the alternative to that is we allow 777, but actually we don't really think they passed the owner's test. Okay. And so they are in a rock and hard place, and some of that, I think, is because of this commission going on simultaneously. If that wasn't going on, then I think they probably would have made the decision earlier. I suspect one of the reasons for the delays as well is not that the Premier League's position has changed or Everton's, as the 777's position has changed. They may be, and we've all read the stories, you don't need to go there, that they may be a slightly different company in terms of their financial wherewithal last September than where they are now, where they are in, you know, at the end of the year. So that might have delayed things. But, you know, I do think you can, when you throw all that into the mix, you can see why it's taken so long. And the Premier League are in an awkward spot. Some would say that's good. You know, I don't think that's good at all, because that doesn't assist Everton whatsoever. And I think that's contributed towards it. I suspect the Premier League are trying to give as much opportunity for this to go through.
Yeah.
I that's what your suspicion is. I don't think the delay is... At the end of the day, we want to be just whatever happens, we're not going to allow it all. Well, not prove it. I think they want to try and make sure that, you know, that there's a that the ownership thing goes through. But you suspect that 777 are making it difficult because of not deliberately difficult, but because of the state of their finances and stuff like this, that is just prolonging the agony for everybody. And eventually everybody suffers there, don't they?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Just finally, Jules, to say on this point, does it think there's a line in one of your pieces there that the Echo understands that 777's belief is that they have provided the answers and the decision is ultimately in Premier League hands?
Yeah, I mean, that's where 777 stand. Their belief is that they've provided everything that they're going to provide, that they think they've answered them adequately, and they're basically waiting for the rubber stamp for the Premier League. They're saying that the ball is in the Premier League's court, essentially. Yeah, I think, you know, we've spoken long and hard about this over the past 6 months or past 5 months and a bit, that where the grey area comes in is if the Premier League, if there's a very realistic possibility of the Premier League thinking that we'd rather not allow 777 in, but having to weigh up a decision based on what the alternatives are. And is it a straight test? Are 777, you know, owners that could pass the test and the scrutiny? Is that the question? And it's a straightforward yes or no. Or is it, are they better than what is currently in place at the moment? And, you know, that's another question. And if they start to go down that route, things become a little bit more complicated because, you know, it's one thing saying no to 777. If they say no to them, what then happens to the club is another question. And I don't know if the Premier League even have that in their remit to think about it. I argue to some extent it's not their responsibility, but as a regulatory body that has a stake in the Premier League being as strong as possible, obviously the Premier League isn't going to want to see, at a time when it's trying to fight off independent regulation as well, it's not going to want to see a club go into potentially administration or something like that if they're responsible for the support ending that might be keeping some of the lights on.
As well as part of that, the other thing comes in, the commission comes into it as well, having been part of the commission process where Everton have suffered. You know, will suffer eventually financially from it if there's a points deduction as well. So I think the two things are interlinked and certainly contribute towards the delay in the ownership issue. Just as well, an add-on to this, kudos to the club and the FAB. I think there's some cynicism, and quite understandably so, over the role of the fan advisory board and the club under the previous regime about that relationship. But, you know, reading the comments yesterday, reading the minutes and the people who were there present from Everton, I think it showed the commitments from both parties, and that was for the common good.
Colin Chong was there and also Kevin Farwell. So, I mean, there is a degree of, you know, some of the most senior people at the club turning up to... Whether or not they can answer questions or should answer questions is another matter, but they're at least there to face the questions.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
And I think that's different from the previous regime where it was noted that somebody said they were going to turn up but didn't or whatever. And I think any owner who's going to come in, subsequently should take a note of that, of what, you know, that, you know, by Colin and the current people at the top of the shop at Everton have approached that meeting and how they've done previously in terms of dealing with, you know, and the relationship with the fan advisory board and kudos to the fan advisory board as well, who appear to have won, quite rightly so, a lot of the fan base over in terms of their role and the jobs they've done. As you say, it's all spare time and resource, and they're well done to everybody.
Yeah. On a brighter note, Joe, you and I spent all of last season going to various corners of the country watching a lot of poor Everton results, but we went to Brighton and Hove Albion, and that was it, the 8th of May, and watched an emphatic 5-1 victory. Same again.
I still don't know where that one came from. I still can't. You know, football's an absolute bizarre game. I mean, it's the beauty. It's why we love it so much. But where that came from, I don't know. I think that's probably... You would argue that Dyche's most important result was to win against Bournemouth, but probably the two most impressive performances that Everton have put under Sean Dyche is probably the Arsenal one in his first game when they won 1-0. Yeah. And then this going down to the Amex and turning over this Brighton side as emphatically as they did. I think that it helps Everton right now to be away from home for a game. Maybe it helps that they are going to go and play against a side that will genuinely seek to dominate possession. Mm-hmm. You know, for well-discussed reasons, Everton tend to struggle when they dominate the ball. They're not going to do that against Brighton. But obviously, it's going to be a very, very tough game. A very tough game.
Yeah. I mean, Gav, you and I were talking about this beforehand. Actually, for all those great players and the great recruitment that Brighton have done, so hence why they're in the prominent position this last couple of years, you think it might possibly be a good time to play them a few hours?
It's got a few injuries, haven't they? They have picked up form. They had a ropey spell before and after Christmas, didn't they, Brighton? They have picked up form. And they've been scoring goals, haven't they? They scored 5 at Sheffield United twice, and they beat Palace 4, didn't they? You'd expect to see, what would you say, guess 75-25 possession. I think though there's a bit of positivity for me because we are better at home. Yeah. And I know what you're saying about how the Brighton game last year, I think, how weird did that happen? But subsequent away performance under Dyche between the start of the season and Christmas shows actually it wasn't necessarily a fluke that. Because we had five away wins, wasn't it, or something?
And also, there had been the away form notably improved under Dyche very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
So the 5-1 was an extreme example, but had started to score goals on the road and be more resilient on the road before that, hadn't they? So it was almost like a fast forward, wasn't it? But it followed a trajectory of improvement.
Yeah, I think there was that stat before Chris was put out. That was only Gordon Lee had scored more goals in his first 12 away matches as a manager.
Oh, really?
Dyche, yeah. Wow. Gordon had 25, Dyche had 21 in the first 12 away matches. So they did score goals. So it did seem a fluke at the time. What did Gary Neville say when he had to give the shock of the season? 5-1, 5. But subsequent away performances, as I say, in the rest of 2023, showed that actually maybe wasn't as big a fluke as what you think. But I think tomorrow we're in a different place to what we were in May, in that the three most important players that day, Calvert-Lewin, Decore, McNeil, are probably all in a different place for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. Injury, fatigue, being out of form. That said, I don't think Brighton is as strong as what they were in May. And it makes for an interesting contest, but I'm expecting to see a repeat of what happened at Goodison. But the thing with Brighton is they'll give you a chance. Even last week against Sheffield United, when it was 2-0, Sheffield United, you always felt still had a chance if they got one. And they're a great team to watch. I love the Zerbi, but they do give the opponents a chance. And most, in the vast majority of their games, the opposition will score.
Mm.
And I think that's what you'll take into tomorrow, really.
Yeah, and whilst it's been a long wait for a win, if you look at some of the more recent away performances, obviously Wolves was a very bad one. Okay, accept that. But Man City, they had Man City for 71 minutes. You know, that was a strong away performance until the inevitable happened.
Yeah.
Tottenham Hotspur, very strong away performance. Probably deserve to win that even though they lost. So even Crystal Palace away in the FA Cup again, obviously they drew that 0-0, but I thought they were the better side in that game, and the last 15 minutes would take a chance to push on. The last 15 minutes were taken away from them with the Dominic Calvert-Lewin red card, which obviously got rescinded. So, there isn't any... And again, this is probably where I have sympathy for the idea that the deduction and the uncertainty of the appeal is affecting the players, because... again, it feels Everton are in a relegation battle as it stands, but even when you look back at recent results and performances, they're not. The Palace game was a bad game and a bad result, but still wasn't a defeat. That was still a game they probably would have lost under Frank Lampard. It was still a game they probably would have lost 18 months ago. So, I mean, especially after going 1-0 down. So the reality isn't as bad as how things currently seem. But it's all amalgamated into one, and it's dragging the mood and the atmosphere and the positivity down, and that's where the problem is.
At the same time, I get the dragging moods down and positivity, but the last two home games, you scraped draws with very late equaliser, haven't you, in both games, which shows that the team's still fighting, doesn't it? You know, it's not as if they're down tools, which you suspect under Mr. Lampard, they did, didn't he, really? It's particularly towards the end. It's showing that, and this goes back to the point at the start of the pod, isn't it? They are not a relegation team. They're effectively a lower mid-table team. And that's what you would expect a lower mid-table team to do. And that's encouraging as well. For all the stick they got from Monday, they still scraped a point near to the death. And that was the benefit you took from that. And I think that's the sort of thing you take into tomorrow. The difference between last May and now is we've scoring goals away from home. Then maybe at the end of last season, we're not scoring at the moment. Unless it's a set piece, and that's the concern you've got in comparing the two fixtures for me.
I think the big thing to look at, almost more, what will be more telling than the results tomorrow, is probably the relationship between Decore and Calvert-Lewin. Decore, Dyche said yesterday, came through unscathed his return on Monday night. So, hopefully he carried on building his fitness this week. It was still quite disjointed, that relationship on Monday. Calvert-Lewin needs Decore as much as Decore needs Calvert-Lewin. They were the partnership that you know, the destroyed Brighton last time, you know, in the first few minutes. It was Calvert-Lewin out wide, he crossed for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. So, yeah, they were the reason everything was so effective last time at the Amex. So, can we see some progress and some development in that relationship, bearing in mind it's a partnership that hasn't really played together for 2 months?
Yeah. Well, there we go. Let's come to the crunch predictions time. Go on, you can go first then, Gab, because you'll just finish there. What are you going to go for? Although...
I think we'll score. Yeah. I think it's a case of, you know, how well defensively we counter Brighton, and whether we keep up. We she did for most of the game, didn't we? Goodison kept our shape well. Didn't really give them a lot of opportunities during the game. And if we can do that, then I'm going to stick me neck on the block here and say 1-1. Okay. I think we'll score that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Joe?
2-2 I'm going to go for.
1-1, 2-2.
That's it. I'm being optimistic. I think a draw would be a very, very good result for a number of reasons. Like Gav says, I do think Everton can score against this team, and probably what's most telling is the pattern in which the goals go in. But, you know, fingers crossed.
Well, I'll be even more optimistic to end this pod on a high note. Last two seasons, Everton only won 2 away games last season. They only won 2 the season before that. Half of those wins have come at Brighton Hove Albion. Maybe it's a lucky ground for the Blues. 2-0 under Rafa, wasn't it? And then obviously the 5-1 there. So I'm going to be ultra positive, and I'm actually going to say, where's this one going to come from? Not quite as good as last season. I'll say 3-1 Everton. And what a way to end the pod.
Yeah.
Be a nice fight tomorrow night.
Let's hope so. We'll end it on that note. Thank you. You've had Gavin Buckland, you've had Joe Thomas, you've had myself, Chris Beasley, your host. And this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.